So last week when we met, we did our intro to Hosea, and we discussed his marriage to Gomer Bat Zvalim, and whether or not the marriage was a nevuah, according to the Ibn Ezra, or something that happened in actuality to teach him compassion. And that's pretty much where we left off at the end of class, you know, leaving that question on the two sides. I leave it to you to decide which one makes sense, especially as we go on with the nevuah today. Today we're going to do the second half of Perek Aleph, where the children are born, and we're going to discuss, you know, the symbolism of their names and all that stuff. Okay, so I'm going to share my screen now, and we'll look at the Psukim inside. You can follow along in Hosea, Perek Aleph, Psukim, Gimel to Tet. That's what we're going to be working on today. So we're going to start with Pasuk Gimel. Vayelach vayikach et gomer bat valim, batahar vateleid lo ben. Right, so he went and he married this woman named Gomer, and she got pregnant, and she had a son. Vayomer Adonai Elav, Krashmo Yisrael. Right, call him Yisrael. Ki od ma'at upakadidi et me Yisrael, because in a little bit I'm going to remember the cost of Israel or the blood of Israel, right? Damim, it can be money or blood. I think maybe the roots are the same. The English here, well, let's look at how it's translated here, but I think the ambiguity is actually important. The bloody deeds at Israel, right? So they translate it bloody. And Al Beit Yehu, on the house of Yehu, v'yishpati mamlachut Beit Yisrael, and I am going to destroy the kingdom of Israel. Okay, so I'm going to stop there for a second and unpack some of this. We're going to get to remembering Etzmei Yisrael, like remembering in this case, like Pakadet Sarah, like God remembering in a very actual way. In this case, it's clearly not positive. This is a message of divine punishment, especially the deeds here don't seem to be good. But before we talk about what that could mean, let's talk about who Yehu is. Anybody recognize the name Yehu? Okay. Anybody doing the cute Tanakh with Rabbi Nit Nomi?
Oh.
Okay. So in Malachim Aleph, Perek Yutet, is the first time we hear about Yehu, and that is in the Perek where Hashem says to Eliyahu, Kol Demama Daka, right? That's the Perek where Eliyahu gets quote unquote fired. I'm taking that phrase from Rabbi Liebtag. And basically, Eliyahu, who is incredibly passionately committed to getting everybody to serve Hashem appropriately and not be have any bamot or do any avodah zarah, it is distraught because he succeeds at Har Carmel, and the next day Izebel puts a price on his head and he literally flees for his life to the desert, and God appears to him there, and they have a whole conversation where Hashem says to him, why are you running away, Eliyahu? And Eliyahu says, I can't handle it. And Hashem goes through lo b'kol, Hashem lo barash, Hashem lo ba'esh Hashem, ki b'damat ma daka, right? God can be found in the still silence. And what I interpret from there, and you know, this is based on the commentaries, is God's giving Eliyahu the message that even though he's incredibly passionately zealous, that's not the only way to get to the Jewish people. And he should take it down a notch. And Eliyahu responds, no, kano kaniti l'Hashem, I can't do it that way, God. I can only do it my way. To which Hashem says to him, okay, I understand. So here's the deal. You have three more tasks to do. Task number one is to go to anoint Hazael Melch Aram, who is going to be the beginning of the end of Malchut Yisrael, which is Aram is then going to turn over into Ashur, which is then going to destroy the northern kingdoms. There's some that are Tiglat Paletzer and Sancheirev. You can read all of this in Malachim Bet, Prakim, Tedvav Tedzayin. And number two is to go and anoint Yehu as king of Yisrael. So again, Yehu, Eliyahu speaks to a king called Achav a lot, right? So to those of you who are in my my villains class, we talked about Achav as being an Ocher Yisrael. He's like a very strong king, part of the dynasty of Omri, and that's the strongest dynasty that we have in Malchut Yisrael. It gets overthrown by this guy named Yehu, and Yehu becomes a partner with Hazael, which is what leads to the downfall. And job number three is Eliyahu has to go anoint Elisha, who's going to be his Navi successor, right? So Yehu is the king that destroys Beit Omri and becomes king in the north, right? So I'm going to remember the sins of Israel. I'll Beit Yehu, I'm the house of Yehu. And that's part, now that you know who Yehu is, that also leads to some of the ambiguity in the Pasuk, because it's this talking about Yehu himself, which seems to be after Hosea. Well, actually it's not. Is it just talking about Yehu's sins? Is it talking about of all Yisrael's sins? And we're going to look at a Malbim and talk about three different options. Vishpati Malchut Beis Yisrael, and I'm going to destroy Malchut Beis Yisrael, right? So he's calling his name, this kid's name, Yisrael. Guys, recognize the word Yisrael from anywhere? Yes. I see a nod. What do you know what?
Isn't there like the valley? Isn't that named after?
Wait, I can't hear you, Tyree.
It's like a valley in Israel?
Yeah,
like
exactly. Emek Yisrael. And if we parse the word Yisra, means to plant, grow, right? Zera, the seed of El, Hashem. Emek Yisrael is actually the breadbasket of Israel. It is the valley that runs from Haifa to Beit Shan, right? It's right across the middle of the country. And it's actually, you know, a plain where we get to some of the wars that we see in Malachim. It's actually an important thing. And you look at the name Yisrael and you're like, you know, like he's marrying this this Zona in order and having children with her in order to proclaim this status of Israel being a little bit negative. And we come across the first name and it doesn't seem particularly negative, except for the fact that, you know, the second part of the pasuk says that it's pretty negative. So I'm going to share my PowerPoint now. And let's see if I hold on, and we'll talk about it. Display. Okay. There we go. Woohoo. Okay. Okay. So the Dame Yisrael, the blood deeds of Yisrael, we're going to talk about the three different options for what that pasuk means. Number one is it's a simple reference to Beit Achab. Notice how, though, they're talking about the sins of Yehu, Beit Yehu, really being about the previous dynasty. In this interpretation, I got all three of these interpretations off of an academic website that like went through the different shot ways of understanding it. I can send you the link if you want to look at it more clearly, but like, you know, this is their boiling down of the issues. The second thing that Dame Yisrael can refer to is Kerem Navot. So again, in my villains class, I believe we did the story of Kerem Navot to prove that Achav was a villain. For those of you who aren't there, well, Tari, you're our representative. Do you remember the story more or less? Should I put you on the spot or no?
Sorry, I got distracted for a second. What did he say?
Oh, that's totally fine. I put you on the spot, and that's me. Okay, so Navot is a guy who owns a vineyard in Emek Yisrael. Achav, the king at the time, says, I want that vineyard. He goes to Navot and says to him, I want your vineyard. Right? Remember, he's king, so like, kings get what they want. And he offers to pay for it. And Navot says to him, no, I'm not selling you my vineyard. You're an awful person and you don't serve Hashem, you know. And Navot, according to Navot, that's the end of the story. Ahav goes home and has a temper tantrum. And his wife, Izebel, says, you have a temper tantrum. I'm going to take care of this for you. She stages a court case in which Navot is killed for crimes against the king for not selling him the vineyard, and Ahav takes over the vineyard, right? So this story in Malachim Aleph is kind of an example of the breakdown of society where the king is willy-nilly killing people for what he wants, right? We believe that our kings should follow tzedek and mishpat and follow the rules, right? They're bound by the Torah and laws. And specifically, Dmei Yisrael, the blood of Israel, is referring to the court case of Navot, where Navot was killed, right? That makes sense. Again, I have the reference up here in Malachim Aleph Perek Chaf, if you guys want to look it up inside. But that was a brief summary of the story. And the final way of understanding the pasuk, which I think is the most pshat level, is that it's not any one historical event. It's that all the injustices that are happening in the northern kingdom, the kingdom of Israel. do you see the typo in here? Which who overthrew? It should be Yehu. In any case. that is... that it certainly is the most straightforward reading, except the reason why I did put the other two interpretations on the side is the phrase Dmei Yisrael, the blood of Israel, doesn't say Chatei Yisrael. So like specifically, it seems that it has something to do with a bloodthirst, right? And that's why the other interpretations I come there, right? A coup is bloody and Navot is a story that's included in Navi, which is bloody. Okay, so there we go. We've got who Yisrael is. And now I want to go through the interpretation. This is the Malbim, right? Kol achad miyaladim mesamal tekufa betoldot hayachasim shel Am Yisrael im Hashem. This is Malbim's understanding of the three names of the kids. And we've read Yisrael's name. So let's read what the Malbim says that Yisrael symbolizes. Yisrael mesamal tekufa malchut beit Yehu. Right? So this is the Malbim's interpretation. Shehitchila be'emek Yisrael. B'tekufa zo b'nei Yisrael lo hayu tzadikim gemorim. Right, so this is clearly the way that the Malbim understands the first interpretation that we just saw in the previous slide. About manhigim nitzu devarim tovim, right? So we do find some good in these manhigim. Yehu hishmid et beit Achav, Yehoahaz hipel al Hashem, Yoash kibed et Navi Elisha, Yeravam natan chofesh dibor le Navi Amos, right? So like we find specific things. If you remember the beginning of our Sefer, we see that that Hoshea is located during the time of Yeravam kingdom. So Yehu precedes this navi in nevuah. L'chein Hashem richeim aleihem kama pamim. So therefore, Hashem has rachamim on them, and here are all the times that He does in the source. Amnam Hashem ra'ah shehem ovrim avirot bein adam l'chaveiro. And even so, all of the things that we just mentioned were bein adam l'makom. So He still sees that they're violating bein adam l'chaveiro. L'chein hichlit lifkod aleihem et dmei Yisrael. And that's why He's going to remember the blood deeds of Yisrael. Again, the blood being a representative of bein adam l'chaveiro. L'hashbit et malchutam ulishbor et kishtam. Keshet Yisrael be'emek Yisrael, right? He hakeshet sheba harag Yehu et Yoram be'emek Yisrael. This bow, lishbor kishtam, which we'll see in the next pasuk, actually, the keshet of Israel, the bow of Israel, is exactly what Yehu used to kill Yehoram. Oh, hakeshet, or this symbol, this bow, sheba birech Elisha hanavi et Yoash. Right, so it's a reference to the keshet that Elisha mentioned with Yoash again, if we see the names of the kings here. I feel like I'm going through a lot of things very quickly. Please stop me if you feel like you need more explanation. In any case, this keshet is symbolizing the military might of Beit Yehu, of Alhu Adayin Ahavotam. But God still loves them. And therefore he told the Navi to call his first son by their name. Right? So if you remember a second ago, I said Yisrael isn't a particularly negative name. The Dame Yisrael gives kind of like a negative coloring to the entire thing. According to the Malbim, Yisrael actually is a mirroring of God's love for them. Because they're doing Bin Adam L'Makom, but not Bin Adam L'Chavero. That is a summary, and he goes through different references throughout the Malachim to prove his point of where we see Bin Adam L'Makom working, but not Bin Adam L'Chavero. Okay? Does that make sense?
Can you just, like, summarize it?
You want me to summarize it again?
Yeah, just sorry.
Okay, great. So he's saying the name Yisrael is a symbol of the kingdom of Yehu, right? Why is it a king symbolism of the kingdom of Yehu? Because it started in Emek Yisrael, so it's a geographical location. And as I said a second ago, it's not a particularly negative name because it's showing that he has this connection to them, right? That the he in this case being God. And there are specific instances where we see that the kings are doing good things in the name of Hashem. Yehu, for example, when he takes over after his coup, he destroys all the avoda of Ahav. In fact, if we go to the pasuk, I'm going to go there. Hold on a second. Here, if we go to the pasuk in Malachim Bet, Perek Yud, right? Sukim Chaf Chet. Vayishmad Yehu et Baal Misrael. Yehu destroyed the Baal, right? That's great. But Rak Chatei Yeravam ben Navada Sherechti Israel Lo Sar Yehu Machrehem. He didn't get rid of what Yeravam ben Navat built, and he didn't turn Bnei Israel away from him. Egleazav Asher Beit El Asher Dan. The golden calves that were built in Beit El and Dan. And if you remember last week, I talked about the fact that Yeravam ben Navat was supposed to do the Piluga Malchut, right? That was his task by God. It came to him from a nevuah. And what he did wrong was he said, oh, now that I have my own kingdom, I don't want my people traveling to the Beit HaMikdash. So I'm going to set up my own local altars. And he built one at the southern end of his kingdom, which is in Beit El. And he built one in the northern end of his kingdom, which is in Dan, right? So Yehu comes along. And he destroys all of the Avodah Zarah, but he doesn't destroy these altars to Hashem, right? So in some ways, he's great because he gets rid of the Avodah Zarah. And in other ways, he's maintaining his power, right? Which is that he doesn't want his people traveling to Jerusalem because that's going to compromise his authority, right? So part of what the Malbim is saying is exactly that, right? These kings, and he gives four examples with Yehu. I'm going to turn on my annotate and I'll underline it for you. Yehu, Yehoahaz, oops, that's not good, Yoash, and Yeravam. All four of these kings did something concretely towards Hashem that was positive, right? At the same time, there was a real lack of Bin Adam L'Chavero, right? For example, symbolized by Kerem Nevot, right? I mean, Ahav did that, but like, you know, people weren't being nice to each other. So therefore, God says, okay, you have some things right and you have some things wrong. You deserve to be punished. But because you're doing some things right, there's still potential there. So therefore, he's calling the Ben Harishon Yisrael, right? Meaning that Bnei Yisrael, I haven't totally lost all hope with this first name. Is that clearer now?
Yeah, but like, why is it Hosea's son that has the name?
Because Hosea is the Navi who's being told to go through this entire ceremony of marrying Gomer Metzavalim and having three children to give this message to Bnei Yisrael. And your question still stands, right? So the Gemara we did last week kind of answers your question, which is that Hashem chose Hosea to do this because he wanted Hosea to understand in a really visceral way how you get attached to a people and you don't want to destroy them, right? So, but Hosea is there as the Navi, living out in actuality the relationship that we have with Hashem, right? Okay, any other questions? Okay. I'm clearing all my drawings. We're going to go back to the psukim here. Oh, it works much more smoothly this week now that I figured out to have them all on my same screen. Okay, so we didn't read Pasuk Hey, which is Vayabi Yomahu Vashibarti Keshet Yisrael Be'emek Yisrael, but we referenced it in the Malbim, right? When the Malbim was talking about this bow, that he's going to break the bow, it's talking about the military might, right? He's punishing them for the Dame Yisrael, and he's going to destroy their military might. Okay, so that's child number one. We've got that here. I'm going to turn on my things. And here we go. Yisrael. Here's our next child being born. Batar od v'tele bat. She gets pregnant again. And she has a daughter. Vayikra shma lo ruchama. And she's called lo ruchama. Right? What's the translation of lo ruchama, guys?
No comfort.
No comfort. No compassion. So anything along those lines, exactly. Why is she called that? Ki lo otzif od erechem al Bei Yisrael, ki naso asalahem. Right, I'm not going to give any more rachamim to Beit Yisrael because I've carried them too far, carried them too much. Right, they don't deserve it anymore, basically. But at the same time, while I'm not having any compassion for Beit Yisrael, Beit Yehuda, hold on a second. Yeah. Let's try this again. I want to have Yisrael highlighted. I want to have Lo Ruchama highlighted. Right. So we've got this dichotomy going on because the next pasuk ve'et Beit Yehuda erechem, but I am going to have compassion on Beit Yehuda, right? In this nevuah already, Hosea is setting up what we know happens, which is that the split between the northern kingdom comes to a point where Yisrael is no longer worthy, they get destroyed, and then we have Beit Yehuda continuing on beyond them. I remember we asked last week, who is Hosea prophesizing to? So it seems really the answer is to both Beit Yisrael and Beit Yehuda, right? There seems to be an emphasis on Beit Yisrael because all three kids are being named, at least in this nevuah. We're going to see that it transitions a lot in the Sefer. But the names are clearly directed at Beit Yisrael, but he's turning to Beit Yehuda. Here, okay. Vatigmol vebidu yarechem roshietem b'anayalahem v'lo ishiem b'keshet v'cherub b'milchama v'susim v'frasim, right? And b'yuda, I'm going to have mercy in them and I'm going to save them, but I'm not going to save them with military prowess, which actually we know that from Chizkiyahu's account of what happens when Sennacherib comes to town. For whatever reason, Sennacherib circles the city and sieges the city and then turns around and leaves. That again is another study for another time. And v'tigmol et lo ruchama v'taher v'tele ben. And she weans lo ruchama and she has a son. Vayomer krashmo lo ami. You should call his name lo ami. Ki atem lo ami v'anochi lo yelechem, because you are not my nation and I am not yours. Okay, guys. So you have all three names highlighted on the page. We've seen a progression here. I want you to take a minute to look through the psukim, and we'll go back into the Malbim about the different periods of history in a minute. But I want you to take a look and tell me what you observe in terms of the naming of the three different children and the progression of the names. Terry.
So they all like progressively get worse. You've got Yisrael, it's like, okay, so he's got like one thing that's like missing. There's like the Ben Adam LeChavero that's missing. And then you've got Lo Ruchama, and they're like, okay, well, God's like, okay, so now you guys don't deserve any like mercy or comfort or anything. And then it gets even worse, and he's like, oh, you're not even my people anymore.
Yeah. That restraining of the removal of Hashem is clearly there in all three names. That's absolutely true. Mia, yeah.
I don't know if it's significant or not, but the only, with the naming of the last one, it says Fatigmol et Lorachama Gatahabatah Ben. Like, it's the only one where it says that the daughter was weaned first before they named this. I don't know if that's significant.
Yeah. That's a great observation. If you look for example, really, like, there's also, as the names get further removed, the process of, or the description of having the children also gets removed, right? That, like, the Pasuk Gimel, right? They get married, they have a children together. Here she gets pregnant again, and here she weans and has another kid. Meaning, there's a progression in terms of the involvement of Hoshea in the birthing of his kids. And I'm going to turn to the PowerPoint again. There we go. Okay. If you look at what's going on, right? Yisrael, based on what Mia said, right? Vayelach vayikach gomer bat valim, vatigmala lo ruchama, right? So, like, the involvement of Hoshea as a partner. The pasuk doesn't say this explicitly, but I want to point out that this is supposed to occur to you, right? Remember that gomer bat valim is a zona. And, prostitutes have many partners. So what's being described with Lo Ami is a possibility that Hoshea isn't involved. I don't think that's actually true. I prefer to think it's not actually true. But
did
I think...
Did Gomer convert?
Did Gomer convert? Who says she wasn't Jewish to begin with?
Oh, true.
Right? Okay. Yeah. But the possibility of parentage being questioned, you know, especially with Atem lo ami v'anochi lo yelechem, you are not my nation and I'm not going to be yours. Like, the pasuk is trying to reinforce that the relationship with God is fractured, that we're not even connected to him anymore. In any case, okay, so we see that again with the progression of going down column labeled number one, Vatahir v'teled lo ben, Vatahir od v'teled bat, Vatahir v'teled ben. So in all three of them, she's getting pregnant and having a kid, right? She's involved in all three of them. I mean, obviously, clearly, the mother is hard to dispute when a child is born. The father is, right? It's why we have the halacha of polygamy, but not polyamorous. Oh, no, not polyamorous. What, I don't know what the other term is when a woman has more than one spouse, right? It seems to be also like a universal standard. I'm making Noah smile. Do you know the word? No.
Okay. That was like prostitution.
Right, that's true. Although, you know, whatever. Okay. Involvement of God in column number two. Guys, take a second and tell me, what do you see there?
Yeah, it's the same like progression. Like the first one has Hashem's name in it, the next one is just he said came, and then the third one is just he said.
Right, exactly, right? There is a removal of God's involvement in every single one of them where we see that actively going on, right? The birthing of these children is absolutely mirroring the message that we should be getting from these children, right? Even the names, Yisrael is not a inherently negative name. Lo Ruchama, I'm not going to have compassion. I wouldn't want to walk around with that name, but like, okay, so, you know, I don't know if we could think of an English version of the name where it would mean that, but we wouldn't like be able to pick up on it. Lo Ami is kind of in your face. You know, I think of it as the parallel to Moab and Ammon. Right? The two children who were born from Lot with his daughters, one of them says Moab for my father, and one of them says Ammon, my nation, right? It's way more subtle, the second child, than the first child. First child is in your face. Moab is also the nation that becomes much more in our face as an enemy, right? And that literary parallel is, I always think is very poetic. Okay. So, Krashmo Israel, Krashmo Lo Rachama, Krashmo Lo Ami. We dealt with that. And then the reasons for the names, right? Keor Ma'at Pakadati, it's Ame Israel, Al Beit Yehu. Baya Bayom Hahu, Shivarti Keshe Israel, Ba'emek Israel, right? So, we went through the Malbim on that. And I'd like to go back and do the Malbim on Lo Rachama and Lo Ami to see what periods of history it's referring to and also like what these psukim mean, right? Lo Ami is pretty succinct. You're not my nation, I'm not your God. And Lo Ruchama, the dichotomy between not having pity, mercy on Israel, but still having mercy on Yehuda. Okay, so let's go back to the Malbim. We have Israel, we've got Lo Ruchama. Okay. So again, this is the Malbim's interpretation of the three periods of history that go with the three kids. We absolutely see the removal of God in stages. And historically, it also works if we go through Malachim Bet. And that's one of the reasons why I chose the Malbim to go in depth in. Lo Ruchama, Misamelet Tkfat Malachim, Shemachu B'Yisrael Acharei Beit Yehu. Okay, so Yehu destroys Beit Omri and establishes his own dynasty, of which we see four kings, right? We saw their names in the previous slide. They are Yehoahaz, Yoash, and Yeravam ben Yoash, right? And after Yeravam, what happens is Aram starts getting stronger and it leads to Ashur. And there's a series of kings that keep coming through. They keep having a king and it keeps being a coup and overthrowing the king. And essentially what's going on is like the threat is coming from the northeast and the tribes that are on the other side of the Arden start freaking out. And do you guys want me to pull up a map to illustrate this or can you imagine it? You know what, let me pull up a map. Because it'll make it easier. Open. I'm going to go here into Hosea preview. There's actually better map service that happens in hatanach.org, but I knew I have this in my cache, so. I want to make it a little smaller. Okay. So if you click on these things, by the way, they'll take you to those sites. Like, but what I want to describe, what I'm talking about now is, so Aram is up here where my hand is, right? Here is Beit El. This is Dan, right? Should the Shomron, Beit El and the Shomron, which is the capital city, are right next to each other. So when Aram comes to start destroying, the 2.5 tribes that are over here start freaking out. And they're like, this king who's sitting over here isn't going to understand what our threat is. So they keep staging coups. So after Yerovam and Yoash, we get a series of kings, Pekach, Pekachia, I don't remember all of them, but it's all there in Malachim Bet, and they keep throwing each other over in quick succession because they're trying to create some sort of strength to stave off the northern threat, right? So what the Malbim is saying is that's this period of history where Shomron is removed from the oncoming military threat coming from the northeast, and there's one king after another, right? Lo Ruchama, I'm not having compassion, and you guys are feeling it, and you're starting to panic because this military might is coming, and meanwhile, down here in Yehuda, basically, right? This is Yehuda. Well, this is actually Shomron. This must be Yerushalayim. No, Giv'ah. Okay, in any case, so that's Binyamin. So Yerushalayim is like right over here where my hand is. Down there, they're not going to feel anything, right? So all of this is the chaos that's going on. Okay, did that map help? I hope. I love maps. It's like part of my nerdiness. What can I say? Okay, so Mitzad Echad. This was an intermediary stage. On one hand, at this point, we don't find anything redeeming about these kings. They were also like rebellious, and they killed each other, right? Those are the coups that I just described. One king killing another king because they're trying to set up some sort of security for their people, right? They may have been well-intentioned, but a coup is never pleasant to live through and not necessarily, you know, an efficient way of ruling. And because they were killing each other, God stopped having mercy on them and carrying their sins, right? He was willing to forgive some sins if they were doing some things that were good. But like at this point, it's devolved into such chaos that God's not willing to tolerate it anymore. Aval. On the other hand, they had one redeeming thing, which is that they remained in Eretz HaKadosh, HaKadosha, until they were actually exiled, meaning they had a sense of identity and connectiveness that Hashem couldn't ignore. But oto tkufa haya hevdel ben Yehuda Yisrael. And at the same time, there was a distinction between Yehuda and Yisrael, and this is a reference to the second part of the Nevuah, right? I'm not going to have mercy on Israel, but I am going to have mercy on Yehuda. Ki al Beit Yehuda Hashem ken richem az, because God is still having mercy for Beit Yehuda. Kasha ashor higlata Yisrael, he lo hitzlicha ligalot gam Yehuda, because when Ashur exiled the 10 northern tribes, he did not succeed in exiling Malchut Yehuda. Hashem hoshia otam lelo kol ma'amad tzivi'i mitzidam. God saved them without any, without them having to do anything militarily, right? And you could look that up in Yeshayahu Lamed Perek Tedvav. Okay, so we have period one of Jewish history being Israel, where there's some redeeming factors in Beit Yehu. We have period two, the history of Malchut Yisrael, where they've already reduced themselves to chaos and they really don't have anything to redeem them. And then we get to period three, Lo Ami. Mesemel et Seret HaShvatim B'Tkufa Chorban Shomron V'Galut. This is the exile of the 10 tribes. Hashem Sar Mihem V'Lo Ishkiach Aleihem Yoter, because God removed himself from them and didn't protect them anymore. Lefachot lo bagaloi, at least not, you know, in galoi, obviously, I guess. Behem kfar lo hayu amo, and they were already not his nation. Okay? But otot kfufa gam b'nei Yisrael ozvu et Hashem b'mei Menasha. And we're going to see also that there will be some sort of decline in the kingdom of Yehuda, where they are going to start doing Avodah Zarah with Menasha, the king who has a reputation of being the worst king in Yehuda ever, who, you know, according to the Gemara, does tshuva in the last minute of his life. But that aside, 55 years of trying to get people to do as much of Avodah Zarah as possible is what's in the pshat in Malachim Ben. Okay? So again, if we go back to here, we see a real evolution in terms of the stage, the names, and those names being identifying different, according to the Malbim, identifying different periods of Jewish history. What I like about the Malbim's interpretation is that I think it fits well with the names, with the psukim, and with this this progression of what's going on literarily within the involvement of both Hashem in the birth of these children and Hoshea's involvement, right? Hoshea's actions with fathering this children is mirroring Hashem's action with his involvement with Hoshea in order to give a message to B'nai Israel, right? There's like a spiraling up of this, interpretation of this nevuah in order to understand what's going on and what B'nai Israel need to be figuring out. And hold on, I'll tab. Let's go back to Psukim. Right? And that gets us to the end of Perek Aleph. Now, we're going to see next week that there might be some redemption ahead. Right now we're leaving it at a low where we are low at me, and what can we do with that? That actually is like so painful to read, right? God is not with us. So we have to see what's going to go on with the Nevuah in terms of Hashem's message, right? Is he just telling us he's going to leave us forever, or do we have some potential to make things good again? Right, and that will be what we'll address next week when we meet together. Dana, when's your flight home?
Tuesday night,
okay.
I thought it was Wednesday, and then I checked my calendar. Nope.
It would be good not to miss your flight.
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody else, any questions? Wonderful. Well, it was lovely to learn with you. And I wish you all a Shabbat Shalom and Tari. I'll see you in a few minutes.
Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you.
If you want to talk.
Yeah, I'll text you.
Okay, wonderful.
Awesome.
Bye.